This is Caitlin Martin recording an interview with Major Riche on November 7th, 2006, and we're going to be discussing the FLQ crisis in 1970. So could you start by stating your date of birth?
December 9th, 1931.
Perfect. And so how old were you when the FLQ crisis happened?
Well, I'd say pretty close to 40.
Okay, perfect. And did you know about the FLQ prior to your deployment in Montreal?
We did, because of course there had been a lot of activity in Montreal leading up to that bombings and so on. But we sure didn't know about the kidnapping before we were alerted.
Right. And where were you when the War Measures Act was declared?
In Shiloh, Manitoba, artillery school.
Okay. And did you think the element of surprise was important when it was declared? Was it a surprise to you? Did you know it was going to happen?
It was a complete surprise.
Okay. And how did the public initially respond to armed soldiers in the streets? You can elaborate.
After we got there, I found that we went to LaSalle. I had a troop, and we went into the city of LaSalle. And operated from there from one of the power generating stations, and I found the local people to be quite cooperative and somewhat relieved that we were there. We encountered no hostility from the general population at all, other than the waitresses, because in Montreal they tip and in Manitoba they didn't.
Oh.
So we had to learn a few things when we were there. Generally speaking, they were good. A number of people came up to our people and said, thank you for being here. We provided bodyguards, teams of bodyguards for politicians at risk. And needless to say, they were very grateful. Their wives were particularly grateful.
Mm.
Because our boys would go down into the basement and stay there all day. And they'd come out at night and they'd set up perimeter warning signals and so on. And then they would patrol that area all night long. So, I had the Caughnawag Indian Reserve along the St. Lawrence River in my area of responsibility, and they were more than cooperative. They hated the FLQ.
Oh.
I wasn't too sure that they didn't dislike some of the Montrealers as well, but anyway, they gave us much cooperation, including in fact, in one place, providing tents for a couple of our people we left there, and helping to patrol. They had boats, and we could get out into the little islands in the river, and so on. So, generally, that was good cooperation.
Okay. So, your main duties included protecting politicians. What other kind of things did you do?
We maintain surveillance and guard over the main power lines crossing the St. Lawrence, and I didn't know it at the time, but they were very, very critical. So, and they were on islands as well. So we had to secure them in some way and maintain some sort of surveillance over them and keep them protected. Plus, we provided post bodyguards for politicians and surveillance on quite a number of other areas as well.
Okay. And so the FLQ was posing a threat to the power lines that you were protecting?
Well, they take into consideration every this would be an obvious target even today with terrorism.
Right.
And by taking out one of those power transmission lines, they could cut out power to the whole northwest or northeast of the U.S. as well.
Right. Okay. How many troops were sent into Montreal?
I wouldn't know the total. I can only handle my own little troop.
How many were in your unit?
We had about 30 some odd.
Okay.
It was a unique troop in that every one of them were leaving the forces, including myself, because they were downsizing the forces under a thing called Plan Restore. And since we were all leaving the force, they thought, well, we had about 6 months to go, so we'd form this troop and we would provide support with artillery weapons. But when the FOQ crisis came up, they needed everybody. And so here was this fully formed, fully trained, ready to go troop, and away we went.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And could you describe your major weapons?
We had standing guns and rifles and pistols.
Okay. And did you have to use them?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. That was the biggest worry of the whole thing.
Right. Could you describe the morale in your unit?
Very high. Very high. Shot up instantly. They were alerted to go. Every one of them were trained individuals, and of course this is the sort of thing they've been, not that particularly, but they certainly were ready to go on some kind of an operation.
All right. Once the War Measures Act had been invoked, did you encounter groups that were openly in support of the FLQ? Did you encounter groups that were in support of the FLQ, or all of that would have happened underground?
No one would ever say that to one of us.
Okay.
Now, to bear in mind that I think they said that the crime rate in Montreal dropped practically to zero during the time that we arrived there until we left. I mean, no one moved in Montreal that we didn't see, and they certainly weren't kind of
antagonized. Right, because they could have been arrested on the spot. Yeah. Okay. What was the relationship between the Montreal police force and the army?
Officially, it was great. Officially, it was all worked out. On the ground, I can only speak from my own experience. It was spotty. Very difficult. You couldn't control the police. I didn't want to control the police, but even trying to control some sort of liaison was difficult at times with some of them. I found, though, particularly around LaSalle with the younger policemen, they got along better with my guys. You have to understand, I had 30 people scattered all over the place, operating independently. And when they made contact with the local police, they got on great. They bore the radios off them, and they did all sorts of things. If I met them officially, the young guys didn't like rank, you see.
Yeah, understandable.
Yeah. Anyway, that's we got on. I wasn't impressed.
And so the police and the army had equal power over arresting. Did the citizens view the police?
I think theoretically we did. We would never have exercised it. There was only one point at which I was ready to really take charge and throw an official out of this spot when it was serious. But in any other case, we would defer to the police whenever we could. That's why we borrowed radios from them and so on.
Okay. So, in Fragile Freedoms, a book I consulted, Thomas Berger writes, public support for the government's assumption of extraordinary powers was tremendous. So, would you agree with that statement?
I think so.
Yes?
Yeah, people were, as I say, on the whole, quite cooperative. I'm very happy to see you, sir.
All right. From French Canadians as well?
Mm-hmm.
All around. Did you find French Canadians in the army felt any different around the FLQ crisis?
I didn't think so, no. I mean, the very few we had in our unit at that time, no. We didn't have that many in our particular unit because, of course, by this time they'd started to form French-Canadian artillery and whatnot units.
Did public opinion change over the time that the FLQ crisis started in October till when the army left in December?
I think the period we were there was only about a little over 2 weeks, and would be about, from when we got in there until November, so a bit more than 2 weeks. But that was because we were rapidly pulled out of there. Even though it was still going on and whatnot, a lot of the troops were pulled out after about 2 or 3 weeks. And I think the presence was starting to wear on the population. They really didn't like people going around with loaded weapons and going into, you had to buy your supplies because our supply system never caught up with us. And we basically were given money to go for food and things we might need. So, sending somebody on a shopping trip with helmets and rifles. And there was a problem because you had to do that because you could never take the chance of having your people surprised or something because we didn't know what was happening. So, after a while, some of the people were starting to getting a little weary of seeing troops all over the place and at every event.
And did the perceived threat of the FLQ diminish after a while?
The intensity was very, very high. I wish I had the dates. I don't. Anyway, for almost the full 2 weeks we were there. It was only after they started to make progress with regard to catching these people that things... And when they started to identify that there was only one small group involved, and the idea that there wasn't a huge movement starting here, the tension started to drop. Up until then, though, it was treated as an insurrection, an apprehended insurrection. So we didn't know what was going to happen.
Right. And so in your memory, what were the results of the FLQ crisis? We know that Pierre Laporte was killed and James Cross was released.
Mm-hmm.
But do you remember how many were convicted or charged?
Well, I think a lot of us, I don't remember the numbers, but I do remember that they made a deal and threw a bunch of them to Cuba. And, I don't think people were very happy about that. I think it was a very miserable way of handling it. They should have cracked down on them, period. Now, whatever the negotiation reasons were, I'm sure they had their reasons, but it just wasn't very smart.
And what would your view of cracking down on them be?
Oh, I'd have incarcerated them.
And not given them passage to Cuba.
Absolutely not. No.
All right. And I have a quote from Not Much Glory by Dan Loomis. And he writes, "It was not a tactical defeat, but a strategic defeat, which the revolutionary movement suffered." What would your thoughts be on this statement?
Yeah, I thought it was a major defeat for the so-called revolutionary movement. Yeah. It stopped everything in its tracks. I mean, and the images around Montreal at that time were a totally secure city in which nobody that was doing this sort of thing could operate. And I think it startled those that were sort of soft line FLQ. I think it really took them aback.
And so my next question would be the soft line FLQ. Do you think that perhaps the government declaring the War Measures Act was a bigger message to those people as well?
I think it was instrumental in bringing that movement to an abrupt halt. There weren't any bombings and all of that sort of thing after the FLQ crisis. There were up until then.
I read in one book that activities of the RCMP, while disturbing, did not appear to have been known to the federal cabinet in 1970. So I was curious if you knew anything about these activities and what kind of disturbing activities those might have been.
Not having participated in the particular engagements that people were disturbed about, but I know, being airborne myself, or ex-airborne, I know all the people in the airborne unit. And I know of some of the operations they went on. And I think they ended up burning a farmhouse down somewhere. But anyway, there were a number of raids that were conducted that I guess upset a few people. But nevertheless, they were deemed necessary at the time. But I don't know that much of the details about them.
Okay. Okay, I have another quote to go on. This is from Rumors of War. In our search for protection from violence, we must recognize that arbitrary abrogation of individual rights weakens rather than strengthens social order. So do you think the War Measures Act weakens social order in any way?
No. No more than the police apprehending a bank robbery or a hostage taking or something of that nature. I think it was strictly that order, except a much greater effect.
Okay. So do you think the government was right to invoke the War Measures Act?
I'm not sure whether that was the response necessary. I mean, it's all right, it's hindsight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At the particular time, with the amount of news we got leading up to this and us going, the picture we had and the intelligence we had indicated that there was an insurrection commencing and that it had to be stopped. So therefore we went in with that in mind, and we had that in mind and carried on our operations that for over a week and a half. We were gone in 2 weeks, some odd, our particular unit. But the intensity level was that, in our part, was as if we were carrying out an operation to stop an insurrection. Even though we didn't see anything, you never knew.
Right. Okay. The October crisis brought us to a condition that prevails in many countries whose methods we reject. So what do you think might happen if a terrorist organization in Quebec, or anywhere in Canada for that matter, took similar measures today?
You mean whether the response would be identical?
Identical, similar. What do you think might happen? It's a theoretical question, but just...
I hope we have a little bit more sophisticated methods of handling that now, and I think we do. I think we have special forces. I think we have RCMP and local police trained in areas such as this, and it may not be necessary to respond in quite this way. At that time, we had none of that. We were set up on a Second World War, Korea type of military, and there's only one way to respond. That was deploy, and that's what we did.
Well, we sped through my questions. And
okay.
Is there anything significant that you would like to add at the end? I think those were great answers.
Just a couple of quick observations.
Yes.
Including Korea, that was the most stressful exercise I've ever been on.
And why is that?
The problem was that you didn't know where the threat was going to come. Therefore, you had to be concerned about every one of your people all of the time. And the second part was I had 30-some-odd people scattered all over LaSalle and parts of Montreal and even across the river that I couldn't get to with loaded weapons and orders to guard this or that. And sometimes the interpretation of those orders might have been a little vague. If you know what I mean. I mean, protect this politician, or protect this particular strategic site.
And what did that entail?
And well, with armed weapons, and you're to stop people from either killing the politician or blowing up or doing something to the strategic site. Therefore, and there's a lone private, or maybe two privates or a corporal there. And they have to make a decision as to how they're going to respond to this specific thing. And for 2 weeks, I thought, my gosh, think of the possibilities for mistakes being made. And I only had 30 people, and there were people all over the place.
But overall, you would say mistakes weren't really made?
No.
It went fine?
No, they did magnificently. We arrived there... We flew overnight from a resurrected air base in Manitoba because they just closed it. They needed it. Flew us overnight. We had 2 or 3 hours sleep in a hangar at St. Hubert. We then are briefing, and I was taken on a reconnaissance while my troops were brought by truck to LaSalle, and briefly given this whole of LaSalle to look at and all of the different sites that we had to protect. And then I had to deploy the people there, drop them off. Well, sometimes I'd drop people off across the river or whatnot, two lone gunners. I may not see them. I didn't see them for 3 days. You know, and they, mind you, they had money and whatnot. But what really impressed me was that every one of these people operating on their own did fantastic. I mean, they maintained, created or maintained liaison with the local police and the local people and the local Indians. They got cooperation from them. As I say, they even scrounged radios and tents and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And they did very, very well. I shouldn't have, but it surprised me. But in fact, they would do that. I would say lesser trained people, that could have been a bit of a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the main thing that, I guess the main stressful thing, and also the thing that impressed me.
Okay, that's great. Okay, well, I'd like to thank General Riche for conducting this interview, and that is all we're going to do for today. So
thank you.
Thanks very much.